Welcome to the world of Shabbos. My name is Reuven Brand, and I invite you to listen in as we share a powerful burst of Torah that will transform your experience of Shabbos. Whether we'll be swaying with a group of Majitzer Hasidim at Shalashuddis or cracking a Talmudic mystery, we'll be pursuing a journey to deepen and enrich our weekly Shabbos experience. Let's get started. Hi, listeners. Thank you so much for joining this special episode of The World of Shabbos. Usually, each week, we share with you a bite-sized nugget, an insight into the world of Shabbos, which is the core of a full-length shiur that I, Reuven Brand, deliver on Sunday mornings in Congregation Or Torah in Skokie, Illinois. This week, we're sharing the entire full-length presentation because we know A, you'll love it, and B, each of the elements, each story, is so precious you can't simply distill it or choose one over the other. So we hope that you will enjoy this full-length presentation of Shabbos stories. Enjoy. The Ribono Shel Olam, you could say, is the world's greatest storyteller. When he gave us the Torah, he gave it to us as a story. He told the story of Adam HaRishon, of the Avos, of the Jewish people, of the whole world. The Ribono Shel Olam is the storyteller, and V'halachta B'drachav. It's an opportunity for us to use this koach, this very impactful vehicle, to tell stories. And the theme of the stories that we're going to share today is Shabbos, which is the theme of our Lima this year. So we're going to connect to Shabbos through this prism of stories. And the first story that we can reflect on is actually extremely timely. It took place 864 years ago, yesterday. On the 14th day of Teves, which was a Shabbos. It actually took place on Friday night. And a man who is well known to you had a dream. And he tells this dream in a letter. He tells the story of how he went to sleep on Leil Shabbos. The man's name was Avraham. Nickname was, what we call him, was Ibn Ezra. He had a dream on a Friday night on Leil Shabbos. And he saw a man, this is what he writes. He saw a man in his dream approach him with a sealed letter. Now, you imagine in those times, a letter, a sealed letter, meant a folded or wrapped piece of paper with a clay seal on it. And the man says to him, "Is your name Avram Ibn Ezra?" And Ibn Ezra says, "Well, yes, it is." And he says, "I have a letter for you from the Shabbos Malka, from the Shabbos Queen." And Ibn Ezra says, "You know, I mamash love Shabbos, I always love Shabbos. I'm getting a letter from Shabbos?" The man says, "Yes." And the Ibn Ezra says, "Thank you so much." He opens up the letter, he unfurls it, and he reads, "Dear Ibn Ezra, dear Abe, I am the Shabbos Queen. I'm the fourth of the Aseres Hadibros. I am the Os, the connection between the Jewish people and the Ribono Shel Olam." And it goes on and on about, you know, self-aggrandizement, the greatness of Shabbos, which we all know. He says, "But I'm very upset because someone came to you recently with a book, with a commentary. And in this commentary, you get the impression, you could get the impression that Shabbos starts in the morning. And the Shabbos Queen is begging the Ibn Ezra in this letter, saying, please help me. Because if this gets out and people have the misunderstanding about Shabbos, they're going to start on Friday night driving to the movies. They're going to start weaving. They're going to start doing business. Because they're going to mistakenly think that Shabbos starts in the morning." So the Ibn Ezra wakes up and he writes a letter. He writes a whole letter about the Jewish calendar, and he articulates the halachic position that when it comes to Shabbos, obviously, as we all know, Shabbos starts on Friday night. And so this story illustrates, number one, the personality of Shabbos, but number two, the importance of learning the laws of Shabbos, of understanding what to do on Shabbos and how to observe Shabbos. But maybe the deepest level of stories of Shabbos reflect a person's love for Shabbos. Maybe one of the oldest, most beautiful stories of how much Jewish people, Klal Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael, how much we love Shabbos, goes back to a man by the name of Yosef. Yosef Mokir Shabbos. Yosef Mokir Shabbos. Literally translated as Yosef, the man who honored Shabbos. Some of you have met Yosef Mokir Shabbos, either as a child or when you learned the Gemara, where it appears in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chav Tes Amud Aleph, where Yosef Mokir Shabbos is a poshut, plain yid, and barely scrapes together a few prutas to make a living, but everybody knew he adorned Shabbos. He made Shabbos magnificent. He was Mokir Shabbos. And he worked for a Nachri, a non-Jew. And this non-Jew was a wealthy man who had a huge estate. And the non-Jew met a fortune teller. The Gemara calls it a kaldom, a man who would tell you fortune. And the fortune teller said to this Gentile, who employed Yosef Mokir Shabbos, he said, "Your whole fortune is going to Yosef Mokir Shabbos." And the Nachri said, "No, no, no, that's not going to happen." So he comes up with a great einfall. He's going to sell all of his possessions and he's going to get out of town. So how do you leave town with a huge fortune? So you sell everything you own and you go to the jeweler and you say, "Do you have a really expensive item in your safe? A really expensive diamond. I have $400,000 and I need to get out of town fast. Can I buy the most expensive? You have a $400,000 item?" So the guy says, in the safe. You know, like, "For you, I can work it out." So he sells the Nachri the $400,000 diamond, and the Nachri buys a ticket, a one-way ticket on a ship. And he says, "I'm going somewhere away from this guy, Yosef Mokir Shabbos." Okay, so he gets on the boat, figures, where's a safe place to put his diamond? He puts it in his hat. He puts it in the hat. Comes the Ribbono Shel Olam, Vayipach. He blows a wind. Mamish, didn't exist a wind like this since it was Makas Arba. And whoosh, the guy's hat, where does it go? Right into the water. So the guy jumps over, but farfallen. Why? Because a fish comes along. Oiskechap. He eats up the hat. And the guy's done. The fish is gone. The next day, the fisherman goes out and he's reeling in at some fish and he catches this fish, he brings it back to the market, he says, "Who's going to want a fish like this? A Shana fish, you know? A nice fish. Who's going to make a delicious gefilte fish?" "Well, there's one guy who I know," says the fisherman, "who is always Mokir Shabbos. He always honors Shabbos. He always goes to get that fish for Shabbos." I remember when I was younger, my grandmother, Aleh HaShalom, she would go to Machne Yehuda. And over there, they had mamish the freshest fish because they were still chai v'kayim. Remember, you know, pop! They had such things. So Yosef Mokir Shabbos, he comes Erev Shabbos, and the fisherman says, "Man, do I have a fresh fish for you. I caught this fish yesterday. It's a lebedik fish. We kept it fresh in the bathtub. Yosef Mokir Shabbos, this fish is for you." The guy takes it home. He cuts it open. Vayhi hayom. Two lines in the Gemara. Now the story, of course, has many meanings and many lessons. But the first is the fact that the man was called Yosef Mokir Shabbos. How much he loved Shabbos. How many people do we know who mamish love? They love Shabbos. The Gemara tells a story about an old man. And the significance of this story is very substantial. It's very consequential because the background of the story of this man, the Gemara describes there was an old man and he was running. And he was running on Friday afternoon, right before Shabbos. And he was carrying two things. And the things that he was carrying, the way that he was running, it changed the course of life. Because the background of this story, as the Gemara tells us in Shabbos Lama Gimel, is that there was a man, one of the greatest Torah luminaries of all time. His name is Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. And Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was living in a cave with his son Rav Lazar, and lived there for 12 years. It's a very extended period of time. And they were on a high level that we can't really grasp. And Rashbi was in the cave, and he comes out of the cave after 12 years, and he and his son, they see what people are doing in the world. They're crocheting, they're driving carpool, they're knitting, they're working, they're selling, they're buying, and he can't. The level that he was on, it was inconceivable that somebody would give up the next world, the precious eternal life, the Chai Olam, and the Osik and Chai Shah, planting and plowing. So everything they saw burnt up and incinerated. And the Baskel went out and says, this is not what I want for the world. This is not a way to live. Go back to the Ma'ara. So they go back for another 12 months. They come back out of the cave, and Reb Shimon Bar Yochai, he's fine. When he sees Jewish people, when he sees Yidden, when they're doing their thing, teaching and working and doing, everything is fine. But his son is still incinerating with his eyes, just looking at things. It was burning. The Gemara says, until that Friday afternoon. Why? Because they saw an old man. An old man. And the old man was running with two hadassim, two myrtle branches. So they stopped the old man. They said, what are you doing over here? The man says, I have two myrtle branches, L'Kavod Shabbos. They say, L'Kavod Shabbos? What? Why do you have two? He says, of course, because Echad Keneged Zachor and Echad Keneged Shamor. Miyad, at that moment, Nachadate was calm. Changed his whole perspective. So what's going on in this story? So Rav Kook in the Ein Hayah just explains this story. He says, you would expect an old man would not run, right? Old people are associated with slow. Rav Kook says, the koach of Shabbos, this person loved Shabbos so much. The Gemara wants to demonstrate how even people that you would not associate with being on the move, even such people are on the move. And not only do they have Shamor, that they observe Shabbos on Shabbos, they're also observing Zachor the whole week. The whole week they're anticipating, they're looking, they're expecting, they're planning, they're menuing, they're cooking, they're buying, they're prepping. They're looking forward to the experience of Shabbos. Oh, says Rav Shimon Bar Yochai to his son, he says, nonverbally, he says, you see, when they're working during the week, they're working for the goal of Shabbos. They could spend a few minutes with the Ribbono Shel Olam. Sheishes Yom Tavur V'Yom Hashvi'i Tishbos. Then we can have a few minutes with the Ribbono Shel Olam. This is all taka. Everything you do in the week, it's taka, very holy. Because it's all out of the love and the anticipation and the goal of Shabbos. And the savoring of Shabbos, which we spoke about before, about how Rav Soloveitchik described his experience growing up in Warsaw. And how in Warsaw he lived a few doors down from a Majitzer Shtibel. And he went for Shalosh Shudas, and he describes that poor Jews would be seated around the table. It was on a street in this section called the Grybauska district, because his father was a Rav, a Mechanech, couldn't afford to live in a fancier place. They lived in a poor neighborhood in Warsaw with this, you know, group of Majitzer Chassidim. And many of them, they worked as schleppers, as porters. And Rav Soloveitchik describes that at the edge of this neighborhood, there was an iron gate. There was a gate in Warsaw where all the schleppers would gather around and they would wait to be hired out for, you know, carrying things. He says that was a sight that he never saw again in his life. It was something from the old world. Trying to explain that to American Jews, like what that was. He said, The Jewish porter who was carrying the furniture was totally bent over in a 90-degree angle. It seemed as if the furniture was walking along with feet coming out of the closet. That's what he said. He said, I knew these Jews well and I constantly spoke with them. They were sincerely pious Jews who willingly sacrificed for their spiritual commitments. And he goes on describing these holy Jews in Warsaw. He says, one time he met one of them sitting at the Shalashudas, at the Mojitz or Shtibel, and he says he was wearing a kapata, and the man looked like a prince. He almost said at first he didn't recognize him. He said the kapata had more holes than it did fabric, but Imamish looked like a prince. And they were singing B'nei Hechola over and over, L'David, the 23rd Psalm, Mizma L'David Hashem Roi Lo Echzar, over and over at Chassidim. And little Yoshiber, this little Lithuanian boy, he looks over and he says to the porter, he says to him, Shain Shpei, in Yiddish, he says it, Shain Sai, Daven and Marib. Isn't it time to Daven Marib yet? And what does this holy porter say to him? He says, you missed the weekday that much? And it wasn't because he had a life of Avodas Parach. That's not why he loved Shabbos. Because Shabbos was his time with the Ribbono Shalom. And I remember as a child, and I share these stories with you because, at least for me, so much of my own personal development, somehow it comes back to stories. So when we were children growing up, Shlomo Carlbach featured prominently in the cassette player in the car. So I'm from that tkufa. Not the pre-cassette player and not the CD player, the cassette player. I don't know, there's something called Super 8 before my, that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm just trying to date myself, put myself into the particular, like, where do I fit in the bandwidth of development? That's whatever, exactly. So I'm not, I don't know what that is. So I still remember. No, I don't. Exactly. I don't. Thank you. I know what the double speed is now listening on the podcast. Double speed I can do. Or half speed. I still remember there was one Chol Hamoed Sukkos that Shlomo Carlbach was in Baltimore and there was a guy who lived on our street, a yeshiva guy who was very, you know, very connected to Shlomo, and he came to the sukkah, he sang, he told stories. You know, he was an amazing personality. So there are many stories that I grew up on that I heard. Carlbach stories, and oftentimes, so many times, they came back to the theme of Shabbos. Shlomo tells a story of a man, the beginning of the story, because oftentimes the stories are stories within stories. The beginning of the story is about a Rebbe from a place that we associate with something else. But originally, this was a Jewish community that was associated with life. It was called, in Yiddish, you would call it Ushpitzin, or in Polish, you would call it Auschwitzim. Now it has a different name. But it started with a Polish name. And there were Jews who lived in this town. So there was a Rav in this town. His name was Reberish of Ushpitzin. So he told a story, Reberish of Ushpitzin, that when he was younger, he was looking for a Rebbe. He was looking to find somebody who would inspire him, someone who he would connect with. And he heard, he used to travel among different tzaddikim, but he didn't really connect. He didn't find his Rebbe yet. Everybody has their own Rebbe, the person that they connect with in this particular inyan. He heard there was a man, a tzaddik, named Reb Shlomo Kashinover. And that Reb Shlomo of Kashinov, he was together with the Chos of Lublin, a student of Reb Shmelka of Nicholsburg, from the great spiritual giants, and that he was coming for Shabbos to Ushpitzin. So he figures, this is a good time to meet someone, maybe he'll connect with him. And he said, that Shabbos, it changed his life. That he became, this Reberish became a chassid of Reb Shlomo Lakashin over that Shabbos. What happens? He says, Friday night, Reb Shlomo Kashinover, he sat at the Mizrach on the east side of the shul, and after davening, and he stood there with his beautiful Hadras Bamin and Strimel and the long Rechel and Bekesha, and people came over and they said, Good Shabbos, and they introduced themselves in this shtiebel in Rosh Kitzin. And he says, a man comes over there, he's a large man, and he kind of like a little bit hunched over, and he extends his hand, and Rav Shlomo says to him, Good Shabbos, Shabbat Shalom, I give a Shabbos. And the man says, Shabbos, but he doesn't really make eye contact. It's kind of like humble and self-effacing to like an unusual extent. So the Rebbe says to him, he says, What's your name? And he's holding his hand, and this Jew is still shaking his hand. And he says to Reb Shlomo Lakashanover, he says, My name is Chatzko. Okay. But Reb Shlomo Lakashanover doesn't let go of his hand. And he says, Do you have another name? He says, What do people call you? So the guy looks mamish, totally embarrassed. He says, Yeah, I have a nickname. What's your nickname, Chatzkala? He says, My nickname is Chatzkala the Kofet Shabbos. So Reb Shlomo Lakashanover says to him, Tell me, why do people call you Chatzkala the Kofet Shabbos? He says, I'm embarrassed. I don't want to say. So Reb Shlomo says, No, do me a favor, stay here for 5 minutes. When everybody finishes saying Good Shabbos, I want to hear this. I want to talk to you. So fine, he sits on the side. He has no choice. He got called out, so he's going to stay there. And they sit down in the corner of the shul, and this holy Jew looks up and he says, I'll tell you, the truth is I was orphaned at a young age, which meant that obviously I had no education. But I was always a strong kid, so I became a schlepper, a porter. Like those holy Jews in Warsaw who stood at the iron gate asking, could I carry your furniture? But he says, I was a schlepper, I was a porter in the marketplace, in the shuk, in Ushpitzim, where people would come, the farmers would come, and they would put out their wares, their apples and their carrots and their potatoes and their onions. So I would come to the marketplace, and there was a woman, her name was Chana. So every week she would come on Wednesday, and she would buy 2 pounds of potatoes, and 2 pounds of onions, and a pound of carrots. And this Chanala, she was like 4'3", all of 86 and a half pounds. So she would say, Chatzko, could you carry the carrots and the potatoes? Could you carry it, everything? Carry it back to my house and drop it on the front door. And of course, I'll pay you 3 rubles. So Chatzko, of course, he says, that's what I'm here for. And she would say, Chatzko, this you have to be careful with it because these potatoes, this is going to be potato kugel for Shabbos. And these carrots are going to be soup. They're going to be soup l'kavod Shabbos. Chatzko, he just felt there was something special about this. So he just picks up the potatoes and the carrots. He's a very strong man. He says, l'kavod Shabbos, I l'kavod Shabbos. He says, carry these potatoes l'kavod Shabbos. And he gave him such chizuk, such strength. He gave him meaning and purpose and light and life, and he connected to it on the deepest level, that the next day on Thursday, a few more people in the marketplace, and by Friday, you can imagine everybody is mobbed wall to wall, and everybody's running, and everybody needs help. So here's Chatzkala. He's ready. Here we go. He's got his schlepping, they had like a strap, and he's got both arms, and he says to the next person, he says, why do you have this? What do you buy? So he says, I'm buying L'Kavod Shabbos. We're going to make Shabbos. So he starts yelling in the middle of the street. Mamash, in the middle of the market, L'Kavod Shabbos, L'Kavod Shabbos. So people, they chuckled, and he became known as Chatzkel L'Kavod Shabbos. So he finishes telling the story. He's looking sheepishly at Reb Shlomo, and Reb Shlomo Kashanov says, I'm very jealous of you. And he starts to cry. He says, that is the holiest, purest, most sincere thing. I can't tell you how much that means to be in your presence. Would you maybe come? I was invited to this very prominent family where they're going to have very nice Shabbos Sudas. I was invited there. Would you maybe come with me? Because I feel like I don't want to miss any time. Maybe you come with me. And we could eat. I'll ask them if they would have space for an extra person. And Chatzko's like, oh, yeah. Said Berish of Ushpitzin, he says, after that, we never saw Chatzkel on the Kavod Shabbos again. And I became a chassid of Reb Shlomo Lekashenaver. He says, until many years later, after I became a Rebbe in my own right, I was always looking around, what happened to this Chatzkel on the Kavod Shabbos? I was traveling in a certain place, and all of a sudden I heard, when I was walking through the street, I heard that niggun, I heard that melody of Lekavod Shabbos. And I realized that what happened was that Reb Shlomo took this Chatzkel Lekavod Shabbos and he brought him into his world of the 36 hidden tzaddikim to a new place, a new community where nobody would know him, and he could make a life for himself together with Reb Shlomo Kishnava. Is like the koach of Shabbos, they were inseparable. And Reb Berish of Ushpitzin said, when I saw how he treated Chatzkel Lekavod Shabbos, I knew that was a Rebbe for me. So here too, there are many elements of the story, but the idea that there are Jews who love Shabbos, the Mamash love Shabbos so much, it suffuses everything. And that relates to, I think, there's a magic of Shabbos. That if we could see it, and sometimes we can, it could raise us up in a different way. Now, there was a holy visioner, Rabbi Yisrael of Rishon. There was a great Hasidic master. He was a towering figure, and he had a very particular way of leading his Hasidim with a royal, a majestic type of approach to life. But the few minutes before Shabbos, he was never seen by his Hasidim. He had an office, a study, and that's where he would meet people and learn and do his spodidus, and that study was locked 20 minutes before Shabbos. So of course there was one little chassid who couldn't help himself. He was very curious. So this little guy, he sneaks into in the office of the Rebbe. There was a closet, and he snuck into the closet at 12 o'clock on Friday afternoon. And he figures he'll camp out there and he'll see exactly what's going on by the Rishoner in Erev Shabbos. So Vayi Ayom, he's waiting. He gets in there at 12 o'clock. None of the Gaboim see him. Obviously the Rebbe doesn't see him. And he's hiding in the closet and he's looking out the keyhole. And he sees, boom, 20 minutes before Shabbos, the Rebbe comes in with his Shabbos Bekesha and his Shabbos Gartel and the Shtreimel. And he opens the door to the drawer, like he pulls it out. And he pulls out a pipe, he fills it with tobacco, and he lights the pipe. And at the back of the office, there's a window. And the visioner is standing there smoking his pipe, looking out the window, and nothing. He just stands there. And this chassid is watching. And then, at what seems to be an exact, precise moment, the visioner takes two steps back from the window. He takes the pipe to the desk. He knocks it on the desk and extinguishes the pipe, puts it in the drawer, and he's about to head out. But before he leaves, he walks over to the closet. He gives a little knock. He says, Mincha. So the little chassid comes out. He says, Rebbe, Holy Rebbe, I couldn't help myself. I just wanted to know what's going on. I didn't understand. I didn't see anything. So the Rishner says, you didn't see it? He says, I was watching as the clouds from the weekday were floating by, making room for the clouds of Shabbos. There's a story in this very old, interesting collection of works. It's a beautiful story of two chassidim. They were very good friends. And they used to spend Shabbos together once in a while. One at one house, one at the other house. And We'll call them Beryl and Shmerel, because that's what I grew up on. And that's the easiest way to remember that. I don't know if you also had Beryl and Shmerel growing up. So they're best friends, Beryl and Shmerel, in their little shtetl somewhere in Belarus, Ukraine, Estonia, whatever it is, you know. And Beryl, one Shabbos, he decides, you know, he misses his friend Shmerel, and he's gonna go to Shmerel's for Shabbos, but they didn't make any plans. They didn't make any arrangements. So you can't just show up to Shmerel without anything. He's going to bring his food that he had made for Shabbos. He's going to bring it to Shmerel's house. Because otherwise it wouldn't be enough food. It wasn't like they had, like we, Baruch Hashem. No, they had betzimtzum mamish. So he brings his little pot, and he goes over and knocks at the door. He says, Shmerel, could I come and spend Shabbos? We can have a Shabbos suited together Friday night. And Shmerel's like, awesome, amazing. I would love to. You know, I don't have soba, I'll give you whatever. So Beryl says, don't worry, I brought my own. And we'll share, we'll have together. So great, they sit down, they sing Shalom Aleichem. They're going through the Zmiras. And they serve the two little pots that they had prepared for Shabbos. And they taste the food. And the food is very delicious, L'Kavod Shabbos. But the food that Beryl brought, Shmuel says, wow, this food is really... This is unbelievable. I can't even tell you. This food is like amazing. What's the recipe? How do you have this delicious food? So Beryl says, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I can only tell you what goes on in my house. What goes on in your house? So Shmerel says, well, I don't know. I light the fire on Friday. And we have this hired help. Three people, they come. They put all the food in the oven. They make it all. Ah. Beryl says, you know, this food is made by my wife. And every Erev Shabbos, when she makes the dishes, she whispers, L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. Shmerel says, ah, now I understand why your food tastes the way that does. Because it's the magic of Shabbos. You can't manufacture that. When we live L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh, this magic of Shabbos, I'll give you one Mar Makom because we're not going to get to all, I mean, there are many, many, many stories. But the magic of Shabbos, it can transform a person's life. I encourage you to find the story of the wife of the Chozo of Lublin. But we'll leave it for that for now. But the fact is that Shabbos has a koach, it has a power to speak, to light, and to ignite, and to revive. It's an unbelievable maisa about Shabbos. It's a hair-raising maisa, Shomu Shamayim, that Rabbi Herschel Schachter, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha, describes as a chaplain in the U.S. Army on the third day of his arrival in a place called Buchenwald. And he describes that on the third day of his arrival in this place, where he found what should not be, you know, you can't even describe what exactly was found, the state of the human beings, the Jews, these neshamas that were so broken and shattered and destroyed. He said it was the third day in the camp, and he found out that there was a PA system. There's a huge, I guess, lahavda, like in an actual camp, like camp growing up. There was a guy who made announcements. So apparently, in Buchenwald, there was a huge speaker system where they would make announcements. So he asked the sergeant who was in charge of Buchenwald that he could make an announcement to the entire camp that they were going to have a religious service for all the Jewish survivors. So the sergeant said to him, go ahead, Chappie. And Rabbi Schachter, who spoke Yiddish, was a rabbi in the Bronx, he made an announcement in Yiddish. Here is the American rabbi talking to you. I want you to know that at 7:00 tonight, there will be an Oneg Shabbos, Kabbalah Shabbos, and what they call the Kino Halli, which was a large, huge communal space that had been used by the Rishonim Arurim for their movies and entertainment. Rabbi Schachter said,
He didn't know what to expect, who was going to come. Mamish people, literally, the gates on love is literally on the threshold of death. He said he walked into the Kino Halle that night, and he said there were at least 1,000 people. 1,000. Packed to the rafters. He said many of them were lame, sick, or dying, but they came anyway. He stood on a small platform, he put on a talis, and he sang Shalom Aleichem. They had no Sidurim. They had no Sidurim. This was 3 days after the liberation. They began singing and davening. He led an abbreviated service with a nigun for Lechadodi. And there was a GI who was there. His name was Hyman Shulman, who wrote a letter to his wife. He says, the service, quote, was the most inspiring thing imaginable. Try to picture, my darling, men who were in all different phases of physical conditions, from those who appeared healthy to those who were half-starved, all Jews, all inspired by their newfound freedom, all full of emotion at attending their first free Jewish service in almost 10 years, given by an American rabbi. I must say that the chaplain actually outdid himself. He delivered an inspiring sermon in Jewish and in Hebrew as well, meaning Yiddish. That's what my grandmother used to call Jewish. She used to call Yiddish Jewish. As prayed for them and with them exceedingly well. There were literally 1,200 men jam-packed into that former movie house, and a couple of hundred more who were not able to find place inside, milled around outside. Concluded with Kiddush, Rabbi Schachter describes, under a little chuppah that he had in a paper cup. 1,000 people gathering for Shabbos, the power of Shabbos. And the power of Shabbos can transform lives. There is a remarkable, astonishing figure. His name is Rav Yitzchak David, Rav Itcha David Grossman. He leads a series of institutions called Migdal Or in Migdal Emek in the north of Israel. When he got to this place, he was sent by the Holy Lulliver. The place was, unfortunately, a crime-ridden backwater. It was a very difficult place. And he came there with one weapon, the weapon of Avos Yisrael, open arms and love. And he has literally transformed hundreds and thousands of lives. He has a school for young boys coming from broken homes, and then girls, and then the whole, like, a network of institutions. His work is beyond unbelievable. Soldiers, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. Amazing. So he tells a Maisa of the first Friday night that he was in Migdal HaEmek, which was a totally secular place. There was no Ruchnius. He tells a story about his first Friday night, which began a series of Friday nights from the first week he was there. For 2 years, there was a Beit Knesset. There were actually a few Batei Knesset, but it wasn't pervasive. He never davened in a shul on Friday night. What happened the first Friday night? He went to a restaurant. It was called Kima. And he sees Jews, holy Jews, but, it's Friday afternoon, and they're sitting there drinking, and they're watching soccer, and eating, and smoking, obviously. This was the 60s, so 50s, 60s, I forget. So they're smoking and watching soccer. And he stands up in the middle of the restaurant, and he says, Ashrei. And he davens mincha, and then he starts chazaras hashatz. That's all he says. And of course, the Sephardic Jews who are there, they're very traditional, so one gets on top of the other one, covering their heads, kadosh, kadosh, you know the whole thing. So he says, he meets the different people. After he finishes mincha, and they're going back to Sheish Beish, and they're watching the soccer game, and he says to them, Chaver Medidim Shabbos Kodesh. Shabbos Kodesh, in the middle of the Kima restaurant on Friday afternoon. And he says to them, you know, I'll tell you a story about a kala. Because he noticed, and I didn't know this was a thing, but apparently in Israel, in certain circles, when someone scores a goal, they have something that they yell. They yell, Boi kala! That's apparently a thing. So he says, he's standing in the middle of the restaurant, he's davening mincha, and this one yells, Boi kala! Everybody raises the beer bottles, the whole thing. So he says, I'll tell you a story. Imagine there's a bride. She comes the week before her wedding to meet her groom-to-be. She comes to his house. They're going to sit down and have dinner together. And when she stands at the front door, she starts feeling wet. She sees that someone's spraying a water gun on her. And then someone starts throwing tomatoes. And she looks up and she sees that's the guy, the chassan. So she says, she runs out and she goes back to her parents. She says, that's it, it's over. So Rav Goldsman said to him, Boi Kala, who's the Kala here? It's Shabbos. Rav Grossman's love transformed that restaurant. The next week, comes back from Mincha, there's nobody there. They closed the restaurant on Friday night. They all went home to make a little kiddush. Everybody, you know, they found their Sephardic yarmulkes and the whole thing. So the next Friday night, he goes to the next restaurant from Mincha and Kabbalah Shabbos. And the next, and the next. Now you drive by, there's a picture in this book, you drive by Migdal HaEmek outside, you know how they have the gas stations, you know, with the big signs when you drive in Israel? He says, the big sign at the gas station says, here it's a Shomer Shabbos gas station. Because he came to them with the love of Shabbos, the appreciation of Shabbos. This one man changed the whole place, the power of Shabbos. But of course, the corollary to that is the Mesiras Nefesh that Jews have for Shabbos. There are many descriptions in this volume, which is called Shema Yisrael. This was spearheaded by a man who, when I was your age, I remember seeing him when we would go to Miami, to Collins Avenue, to Grandma and Grandpa, Zichronim Levracha. He had I think there's a picture of him in here somewhere. He had a beautiful bekesha. It was a very, very ornate bekesha. And he always wore, you know, the Hungarian Biberhut. But you see, he had very thick payas and no beard, which was very unusual. You know, my brother and I, we never saw who saw a Chassidish Rebbe didn't have a beard. His name was the Kalever Rebbe. He's in the other world now. But when we were kids, he used to come to Miami to Collins Avenue. He had a stick. And he was the one who drove this project. It's called Shema Yisrael. It's a collection of testimonies of people in the Mesiras Nefesh during the war years, before, during, after, the traces, the years. So at the time, we didn't understand why didn't he have a beard. So we found out later why he didn't have a beard. Because when he was there, they experimented on him. And because of that, that meant he couldn't develop in certain ways. And he, wherever he would go, he would always say Shema, and he said, you have to say Shema to remember all those people. That was his project. So he has in here the most amazing in this collection. There's so many descriptions of the Mesiras Nefesh of Jews in the war for Shmiras Shabbos. There was a man, his name was Rav Aaron David Ehrlich, who lived in Bnei Brak, who described that there was a little camp called, I'm going to butcher the name, Chistausa, where they had a munitions factory, and in this munitions factory, they had a block of prisoners, 670 guys, and they had a Friday night minyan for Kabbalah Shabbos every week. And each of these Jews who would get together in this minyan, they kept a slice of bread during the week so that they could make Kiddush and a Shabbos meal together in this munitions barrack. And they sang on Friday night together with each other, melody after melody, late into the night. And they would teach each other new nigunim. And so this Reb Aaron David Ehrlich would teach his grandchildren different Shabbos nigunim. And they would say, where did you hear this nigun? He said, this nigun, I learned it in the Chistauska camp. The nigunim of Friday night. He tells a story. This man, it's a crazy story. And these stories, some of these stories are totally impossible, but they're true. They're absolutely true. That there was a guy in a camp near Vilna where this Yid was in charge of listing everybody who was going out to work on this particular day. But on Shabbos, he didn't want to write the names down. So he counted them, but the other guy was doing the writing, someone else. So the German said to him, you're the supervisor, why aren't you writing? So the Yid says, you know, it's not a problem. What's the big deal? The guy, he wrote it down. It's all written down. All the numbers are there. So the German says to him, why don't you write it down yourself? Because, of course, he knew what was going on. 120 men stood and watched this. The German says to him, I order you, you have to write the names down by yourself. So the Jew says to him, I'm not going to do that. Today's Shabbos, and I don't write on Shabbos. So the German says to him, he's furious. He says, if you don't write it, I'm going to shoot you right now. So the Jew says to him, so shoot me. Shabbos is Shabbos. I'm not going to write it down. And no one moved. The SS guy, he looks down and he walks away and says, get out of here. Can you explain it? But that's, it's unbelievable, Mesiras Nefesh for Shabbos. And at the same time, we also have to realize that we need to remind ourselves of the seriousness of Shabbos. I'll tell you a ma'aseh v'didi hava uvda. The story happened shortly after we came to Chicago. You know, one of the great things about being in the community is spending time with some of the younger people, students especially, in Skokie Yeshiva and Ida Crown. So one of the boys, he asked my opinion. Not that I know so much. But he said, I don't know what to do. I have a question. He said, this boy comes from a family where many members of their family are not Shomer Shabbos. They don't know about Shabbos. They don't understand the beauty of Shabbos. And they have a certain prominent member of this family who is, I don't want to use the word imposing, but is suggesting very strongly that he wants to take them to a college football game at the University of Wisconsin on a Saturday. And this person said, don't worry, you can have a hotel room and you'll walk to the game and I'll carry the tickets. This person's not Shomer Shabbos. But he wants their whole family that they should go together to the Badgers, right? To watch the Badgers play on Saturday at the University of Wisconsin. I think it's in Madison. So this boy says to me, am I allowed to go to walk on Shabbos to watch the Badgers game with my family? What should I tell my family? Then we can figure out, you know, all the details. So I'm like, okay, this is a very serious question. It's a serious ma'aseh. So I spoke to two rabbeim, two teachers of mine, two great pillars of light. One is in this world and one is now in the other world. My Rebbe, Rav Tzvi Sobolovsky Shlita, one of the Rosh Yeshiva at YU, who's one of my primary rabbein in Halacha, and Lahavdil Min Lachaim Lachaim, Rav Gedalia Dov Schwartz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And they both gave me the same response. They told me the same thing. They said, Aser Mida Oraisa. Biblically forbidden. Mikra Kodesh. Shabbos is a time of holy assemblage. To be in a college football stadium environment on Saturday is not Shabbos. The seriousness of Shabbos, the sanctity of Shabbos, the sacrifices that we have to make. You know, thank God, most of us don't have to make the sacrifices that my grandfather, my maternal grandfather, Zichron Levracha, had to make when he came here as an immigrant boy and get fired every Friday when he wouldn't work on Saturday. Until he ended up stocking shelves of Chaim Baruch, Ben Rav Elimelech, Yisham Shed Heaven Aliyah. He used to tell me after he had a stroke when he was older, so right before my bar mitzvah he had a stroke, so he used to spend a lot of time with him. I would go to Florida to visit with him, and then when he would, whatever, so I would help him get ready for bed. He wore a long nightshirt because it was hard to, you know, get everything dressed. So he wore a long nightshirt, and I would help him get into bed, and I would ask him to tell me about what it was like in those times, in the 20s and 30s. So he described how he had to work ended up in working some kind of like grocery shop, stocking shelves and cleaning the bathroom, and because every time he got fired from one place to the next. So to realize the sacrifice in the Mesiras Nefesh, it also means to take Shabbos seriously. And the fact that maybe technically speaking, I didn't violate any law, both Rav Sobolovsky and Rav Schwartz took it as a davar pashut, that it's an issur d'oraisa. But didi hava uvda, had this ma'aseh. But of course, we have to end with Two last thoughts. The miracles of Shabbos and the embrace of Shabbos. The miracles of Shabbos, they speak to the zechuyos, the merits that a person has. The Gemara tells a story of a guy who one day he woke up and he wasn't paying attention to the fact that it was Shabbos, and he noticed outside there was a huge storm. So he ran out, he wasn't thinking, he ran outside, there was a huge storm, and a part of the fence that was protecting his property, his field, had collapsed during the storm, during the night. So he's standing there in a panic. Of course, he's not thinking straight. He's thinking, I got to fix it. I got to build back the fence so the animals aren't going to come, eat up everything, all my food. And then he says to himself, Ribono Shalom, it's Shabbos. 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 He says, okay, Shabbos is Shabbos. So he goes back in the house. The person feels at that level of Shabbos, Kol Malach L'Chasui. He wasn't even worried about it. He didn't deal with it. He comes back, Motzoi Shabbos, the Gemara says a miracle happened for him. In that spot where the wall had fallen down, there was a tzlaf, which is a thick bush type of, like bramble type of thing, that grew exactly in its place. And the wood from this bramble was, apparently this bush, was very valuable. So not only was there a perfect hedge filling in where the breach was, now he had a very, right? A very lucrative business opportunity, the Gemara says. That's the miracle of Shabbos. I saw there's a book, a beautiful sefer of Zmirus with the stories and teachings of Reb Melech Biederman, who I love Reb Melech. So Reb Melech tells two wild stories of the miracles of Shabbos as it relates to Tosefes Shabbos, the time, the few extra minutes that we put on to Shabbos. He tells a story of a guy who came to the Pnei Menachem, the Ger Rebbe, the son of the Imre Emes. He came to the Pnei Menachem because, unfortunately, the Maisa goes like this. And again, these are miracle Maislach. You have to be careful how to apply them and understand them. But there was a man who came to the Pnei Menachem, and he was very, very distraught because he had a son who had left their family tradition. And these things, sometimes they happen for various reasons out of anyone's control. The Ribono Shel Olam does strange things sometimes. We can't understand them. So the Pnei Menachem said to this man, I'm just reading what it says in the Maisa, that he had a Kabbalah from the Imre Emes, that Tosefes Shabbos is a skula for miracles, for many things to happen in a person's life, that they're out of the ordinary, to be saved from many things. So the Pnei Menachem gave this guy advice. He says, you should all be mekabel on yourself every week, to be Mosef Mechol al HaKodesh, to add extra time right before Shabbos. And parenthetically said, you should say Tehillim during that time, and you'll see a miracle in that merit. And according to Reb Melech V'kach Ava, he tells another story of an elderly guy, a single guy, American boy, was learning in Israel, and for many years could not find a shidduch. And he was at wit's end. He had a stopover in London, and there's the kever there of a gaon, a tzaddik. His name is Reb Shalom Schatz. And apparently there's a tradition that if you go to the kever of Reb Shalom Schatz on a Friday, an Erev Shabbos, and you have a Kabbalah, that can help strengthen a person spiritually. So Reb Melech tells a story, wild maisa, that this elderly guy goes to the kever of Reb Shalom Schatz on a Friday because he has a change in London. He goes to the cemetery and he says, Ribono Shel Olam, I'm begging you, I want to find my soulmate. And he says, I'm mekabel on myself, a half hour to accept Shabbos early. He heads back to Israel the next, after Shabbos. That next week, he starts getting himself together. And he realizes on Friday afternoon when he opens the suitcase, when he gets to back to Israel, because he hadn't looked at it before, that his bekasha was in the suitcase next to the toothpaste. And for all of us experienced travelers know, do not leave your toothpaste next to your bekasha. Because you know exactly what is the end of that story of the toothpaste. By the way, it goes also with deodorant. The spray deodorant, do not leave that outside of a Ziploc bag next to your Shabbos bekasha. Because your bekasha was black, but now it's white. So this poor bacharel, not only is he, looking for a shidduch, he's now going to show up to shul, but it's a half hour before Shabbos. And he was mekabeling himself that he's going to be mekabel Shabbos a half hour early. So what happens? He's embarrassed. He's embarrassed, but he's not going to violate his Kabbalah. He's going to observe Shabbos. He's going to commit to observing Shabbos. And he's stuck with this white toothpaste looking bekasha. So instead of going to shul in Yerushalayim, you know there are many places like this, he goes to the old age home nearby, the Moshev Skenim, because it's less embarrassing. So he's going to daven in the old age home, in the Yerushalmi old age home. So they see a young man there with the toothpaste on his bag. It's not the biggest deal. So he goes to this Moshev Skenim, this home for the elderly, in the morning, and then also goes back for Shabbos Mincha. And his luck, of course, one of the elderly gentlemen, you know, with the walker, there's always that guy who's like, hey, come over here, tell me. So he says, the guy comes over, motions, come talk to me. So this older man says, Zitz Darton, come sit over there. So what's your story? What happened to your Bekisha? The guy's so embarrassed. What's he going to do? So he tells the man the whole story, how he doesn't have a shidduch yet, and he is looking for somebody, and he made this Kabbalah, and when he opened the suitcase on Erev Shabbos, the toothpaste, he wasn't going to break his commitment. So the man listens to the story. He says, okay, good luck. The guy leaves. The man, he shuffles back to his room. He calls his son. He says, your daughter, my granddaughter, I've got a guy for you. V'kach hava. That week they went out and became a shidduch. This guy was so impressed, the older man, that this young man was going to keep his commitment to Shabbos. Kach hava matza, the ben zugo. And finally, opening ourselves up to Shabbos. And we'll end with this story, because all of us can open ourselves up to embrace Shabbos. This Shabbos takes place at Harvard with someone who we know. A college-age woman who grew up in a conservative home, conservative with a capital C, conservative. And they had, like, kind of Shabbos, sometimes Shabbos, they drew whatever. But she was always searching and yearning, trying to figure out what's authentic Yiddishkeit. Like, where do you find that? So she finds herself in college in Harvard, and she moves into her dorm room on Saturday morning, and she's walking around on Saturday, and mid-afternoon she passes the Hillel house in the Harvard, and she was totally new, this student, and she's homesick, and she's like looking to connect with people, so she sees somebody there, and somebody opens the door, and she said that person changed her life. Because the person says, oh, I'm so happy that you're here. I'm so sorry you missed davening and you missed lunch, but we're going to have another get-together this afternoon. I don't know that they told her there's going to be tuna fish, right? I don't know if that would have been the clincher, but the student said, come back at 5 o'clock for Shalashuddis. Shalashuddis, she never heard of what Shalashuddis, but she says, that's called the third meal. She never heard of such a thing, Shalashuddis. She said, sounds like gobbledygook, Shalashuddis. What is that? But she says she came back at 5 o'clock. There were about 3 dozen students at Hillel. And we sat down to eat pizza, hummus, and other snacks. She doesn't mention the tuna fish, so I don't know what kind of Shalashuddis they had there. And then they started to sing. Everybody was very friendly, and they spoke, but then they sang. She said they sang Yadid Nefesh. Yadid Nefesh. A song that compares the Jewish people to a deer running to do the will of its beloved God. She says, that song became so important to me at Harvard that 12 years later, I chose it to be the song played as I walked down the aisle to get married. And after, they sang Yadid Nefesh, they sang Mizmor LeDavid. And as the song went on, building in intensity, one of the final lines moved me even more. The psalm thanks God for setting a table before me, Taruch Lefanai Shulchan, for raising me up above my enemies. And Kosi Revaya, my cup overflows. As we sang that line, I felt choked up. Not the emotion I expected to encounter on a late Saturday afternoon at my new college. She says, but she was captivated. The entire late afternoon, maybe it was an hour and a half, the whole meal, but she felt energized and refreshed and she couldn't wait for the next. And that was the beginning of her journey to a life of Shmiras Torah and Mitzvahs. That Shalosh Shudas. And of course, like everything, it's complicated. Afterwards, she had steps down and steps up and back and forth. Angels at the Table is the name of this book, of her book. Yvette Altmiller. But the power of Shabbos that we can embrace, to realize the gift. The Gemara has an expression, Matana Tova Yesh Beveis Genoza. I have a gift for you. It's a magical gift. It's a powerful gift. It's a gift for which we are Moser Nefesh and we cherish. It's the gift that we can embrace every single week, that Matana Tova. It's the gift of Shabbos. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The World of Shabbos. Please subscribe to this podcast and leave us a great review. For more Torah learning opportunities, please check out our Kollel's website, www.torahchicago.org.